Wretched Radio begins in 3, 2, 1.
So it's not a sin in your church to have an abortion?
That's the kind of conversation we would have finding out your story, where you're from. God's the judge. People have to live with their own conviction.
The science is clear. The Bible is clear. And if we're honest, our intuitions are clear. We know what we're killing. We're killing a human being.
It's time for Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
Let's go talk about the book we all read.
Books, you know they're dangerous.
Take a look, it's in a book.
So many books, so little time.
Especially with long openers, this is Wretched Radio. Let's talk about some books. You may not be able to get these any longer at Lifeway. They're closing 170 stores nationwide. Continuing online sales, another sign of the times. Brick and mortar, struggling to survive. Lifeway closing 170 stores. Where will people get some of the fine offerings that are on the shelves at Lifeway? Don't panic. You can still get them online if you need Jesus Speaks. Or
the Precious Moments Black Market is red hot right now.
Lots of angel
and
figurines.
Testaments.
You're just going to have to find them online someplace. Or what? Hey, girl, shut up or something.
Wash your face.
Wash your... Sorry. Believe me, in 100 years, nobody's going to be talking about that book. We talk about some great people from a century ago that were brilliant theologians. That book, I don't think that it's going to be around for very long, but let's get to some books you may or may not be familiar with, starting with a fellow who is a Freud expert. What does that have to do with Christianity? Well, in this case, I think it has a lot to do with it because the fellow who was a great student and writer about Sigmund Freud, authoring a book called The Triumph of the Therapeutic, Uses of Faith After Freud. This sociologist, cultural critic, cultural Jew named Philip Reif, seeming to be a bit prophetic. An article by Carl Truman talking about Philip Reif, not his books on Freud, but a posthumously published trilogy titled Sacred Order, Social Order. And he, as a cultural Jewish man, a sociologist, looked out over the landscape to try to figure out what's going on, where have we been, what's happening, and where is this going to lead? And none of this will really shock you, because you and I recognize that any time a culture is not saturated with Christian teaching, well, things are going to get wonky. And aren't we seeing that these days? So I thought this was a rather fresh perspective, you know, to start a dialogue. To just have a conversation. I'll just get to the book, Tom. Reif argues there is a seismic change. By the way, this is his later work. So give or take 2000. His earlier works, published in the 60s, where he received more attention. These are his later observations prior to his death. He says there's a seismic shift, a change in how our society justifies its beliefs and practices. And I thought this was fascinating. He doesn't say that this has been going on for decades. He says, no. You're seeing the culmination of ideas spread out over hundreds of years. Have you wondered why we're experiencing such a cultural shift? This has not been fomenting since yesterday or the 60s. It's been going on for centuries. It is these ideas that tend to exist in academia, philosophical circles. They make their way down eventually to academia, then to the famous people playing it out, living it out, writing about it. In our case, Hollywood speaking about, making movies about. It trickles down, and we are starting to see that now, and that explains why there is a J-curve. You know, the J-curve, things are kind of moving forward. They're going up a little bit. And then all of a sudden, they just reach this point where, boom, they take off. That's been going on for hundreds of years. Philip Reif saying, let's divide society into three categories. First, second, and third world cultures. Now, you have to throw out your thinking of third world culture. Just lose that. That's the really poor. First world, very wealthy. Second, third world, Venezuela. You know, where socialism has done such a bang-up job. These are first, second, and third world cultures based on Philip Reif. First worlds characterized by myths that ground, justify their cultures through something that transcends the immediate present. That's what this is ultimately about. Is there any transcendence? Is there anybody, anything out there who can tell us what we are doing, why we're here, where we're going when we die, telling us what is right and what is wrong? This first world society, they believed in Norse sagas, the Iliad, the philosophies of Plato, mythic stories, Native American society, natives, those stories of the gods, something that was a bit transcendent. Whatever the content, what they share in common, they make the present culture accountable to something greater than itself. That a belief in fate is perhaps the key here, that things are not under our control. There is somebody, something else, whatever you want to call it. Second world cultures are characterized not by a belief in fate, but by faith. Examples, Judaism, Christianity, and Islam. Now remember, this is a cultural commentator who is a cultural Jew talking about how he characterizes cultures. And he sees Judaism, Christianity, and Islam basically on the same plane here. That a culture is controlled by those faith-driven religions, where cultural codes are rooted in the belief in a specific divine and sovereign being who stands over and above creation, to whom all creatures are ultimately accountable. Now, first and second world cultures, similar. They both set their social order on something, they even call it sacred, something deeper. It's the third world that represents a decisive rupture on this point. And we are starting to see the third world take over. They're characterized by their repudiation of any sacred order. Now remember, this was written over a decade ago. Philip Reif was not alive to see the things that he is describing. At least, not with the same rapidity, and not with the same strength and force. Consider Barbara Streisand, very briefly. But if we must consider her, consider what she said about Michael Jackson and the kids that accused him, they're now adults, of grooming and molesting them when they were 7 and 10 years old. Barbara Streisand, I'm paraphrasing, she said something like, well, you know, those boys, they did say they were thrilled to be there. It didn't kill them. And so it wasn't a bad thing. What is that? That's third world thinking. That's all that is, third world thinking. Now, just so you know, Barbara Streisand's publicist apparently feels really bad about it and released a statement apologizing and applauding them for telling their truth. Not the truth, their truth. I also saw Diana Ross tweet. Nobody invited her to the party. Nevertheless, she tweeted something like, hey, Michael Jackson was a wonderful fellow, so quit critiquing him. Stop in the name of love. 21,000 people liked it. This is all coming out of a Netflix special on Michael Jackson, demonstrating that the guy was really bad. Bad. He was really, really bad. There are celebrities supporting him. There are people loving him despite those behaviors, stating, Look, it was, I think it was Barbara Streisand. You know, I really blame it on the parents. And Michael Jackson's upbringing. Remember, it's always an external source for the problems with a third world culture. Barbara Streisand seems to be personifying it. Nothing in the third world beyond this world by which culture can be justified. Here's the implications, according to Philip Reif. They're comprehensive and catastrophic. First, because of their rejection of a sacred order, third world cultures face an unprecedented challenge, that of justifying themselves on the basis of themselves. No culture in history has ever done this successfully. It is a fool's errand that ends in cultural collapse. No culture in history has sustained itself merely as a culture. They are dependent on their predictive sacred orders and break into mere residues whenever their predicates are broken. That is the main reason why our late second cultures and thirds are increasingly unstable. Bingo. Now, you and I look at that and go, well, I don't need to be a prophet for that. When we've got a book called Judges, Every Man Does That Which Is Right in Their Own Eyes. That is the culture we are currently living in and feeling. This is Wretched Radio. And now, another great story from Cindy Marty of the Tomorrow Club.
A mother of a Tomorrow Club's child who's a university teacher. She just got saved because her daughter was going to the Tomorrow Club. And now she's bringing the gospel into her university.
Over and over and over again, we hear those stories and we never grow tired of them. Eastern Europe is being impacted by the Tomorrow Clubs, kids meeting clubs. The kids come, they learn about Jesus, they sing songs, they pray prayers, they get some snacks, and they get loved on, they get saved, they bring the gospel home to mom and dad, they get saved, then they bring the gospel. It's like the shampoo commercial, and so on and so on and so on. Would you please consider supporting your own Tomorrow Club? It's $30 a month for 30 little disciples. It's having a massive impact in Eastern Europe. You can do that at tomorrowclubs.org/wretched.
Thanks much for joining us. Glad you would spend part of your day with us at Wretched Radio. You know of our millennial initiative, correct? Where we hope to reach a lost, depressed, anxious generation with the gospel. We also know that millennials get their information differently, so we're going to go there. Almost half of millennials watch no content on traditional TV platforms, but almost all millennials spend at least 2 hours a day on their phone, so we're building an app. And so that app has something to do while it's on their phone, we're looking to invade online streaming services. Roughly translated, that means coming soon, Wretched's full episodes, including filmed full episodes of Wretched Radio, will be available on more platforms like YouTube and Facebook. So if I may ask, would you consider becoming a Wretched Gospel partner today and help us reach millennials together? Visit wretched.org/donate for details. Wretched.org/donate. Wretched. Amazing grace. Amazing gospel.
Please listen very carefully to these 14 words spoken by a man who it is evident is suffering still from the effects of participating in the abortion of his own child.
I'm the father of five, but only got to raise three of them.
You hear the regret? Daddies are victims. Mommies are victims, and most certainly babies are victims. The war for life, it is heating up in this country, and while our government seems bent on taking the lives of innocent human beings up until the moment they are to be born, and now, even after they are born, there's something that we can do to stop this heartache and travesty of justice. Please support preborn.org/wretched. Providing ultrasounds saves lives, saves heartache. $28 per ultrasound. Please engage in the war for life. preborn.org/wretched.
Know your church fathers. Athanasius was the Bishop of Alexandria in the 4th century. He was a champion of the Church's fight against Arianism and was a chief author of the Nicene Creed. However, his orthodoxy did not equal popularity. Athanasius was exiled no less than 5 times, but Athanasius chose to honor God instead of man.
This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
Welcome to a third world order. This is Wretched Radio. Sociologist Philip Reif, not a Christian, Jewish by heritage. How much he practiced, don't know. He wrote extensively on Sigmund Freud. He also was a cultural critic, taking a look at history. How did cultures operate sociologically? Why did they behave the way that they did? Why do we behave the way that we do? Written, give or take, around 2000. It is a book released posthumously called Sacred Order, Social Order. And he breaks cultures into three world orders, three different types of societies. The first world, not rich and lavish lifestyles, first world, people who believed in myths. So think, for instance, pagans, people who followed Greek philosophy. They loved the Iliad. They loved myths, epic stories. But even though their beliefs were not correct, they at least had a sense that there is something out there bigger to whom I'm going to be held accountable, and that kept culture in order. If you've ever read through the book of Acts, it's fascinating to me. It's right around chapter 22 and 23, Paul having to give a defense of himself. The Jews are wanting to kill him. They take an oath that we're not going to eat until we kill him. And yet, because of Paul's Roman citizenship, his nephew, going to the man in authority who was going to be hearing his accusers, said, whoa, 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 this guy's a Roman. And he amassed huge amount of troops to march Paul out to keep him safe because he's a Roman citizen. And I remember reading that and going, why would he do that? I mean, what? He doesn't have a Christian value system. Why a sense of justice? Well, these ideas that there is somebody to whom we are accountable, I think was one of the social glues that held a society together and kept it from going completely bonkers. And I think that's why our current culture isn't completely just unraveled, because there are still enough people who believe in a higher being, whatever it happens to be. But as that recedes, then culture has nothing to tether itself to but itself. And that is why Philip Reif says the second world order, which is what we've experienced in America for the last several hundred years, it's based on faith, not fate like the first world, but faith. That is the culture of Western civilization as you and I know it. However, because of forces, people talking, ideas, academia, philosophers have been introducing steadily more of a humanistic worldview, a dismissal of the divine. There is no God. We will decide everything. And that is a third world culture, according to Philip Reif. Let's get to the Carl Truman review of his book, Sacred Order, Social Order, Philip Reif. Why is so much traumatic cultural change occurring with such rapidity? Hey, I use that word. And intensity today. We can helpfully apply this scheme to our current context of first, second, and third world orders. The proliferation of identities and the consequent chaotic militancy of identity politics is inextricably related to the collapse of the sacred, to the demolition of any transcendent metaphysical basis on which a coherent social order might be founded. You and I know that every man did that which is right in their own eyes. We see an example of a third world in the book of Judges. We see it regularly, frankly, in Israel. They stop believing in God, or they worship something on a hill someplace, and the culture would devolve until God would disperse them, bring them back, set up a king, have a ruler, have somebody to control it. But every time religion receded, chaos increased. Bingo! It's what we're seeing today. Philip Reif notes that third worlds, non-religious cultures, are marked by scorn for the moral codes on which second worlds are based. Now, I don't think that he saw that scorn before he died in 2006, but we see it today, don't we? We see scorn toward Christians. Oh, how dare they? I've got a set stack of stories filled with scorn for Christians. I'm thinking that Christians, that we don't let our little children determine their own gender. How can you be so wicked? It's morality flipped on its head. Back to Philip Reef, they turn those into matters of scorn, and vice comes to be regarded as virtue. Anybody? Isaiah 5. Woe to those who call evil good and good evil, who say up is down, black is a camera. Nothing equals anything. It's complete chaos. That's third world living. And that is the force that we are being greeted with every morning when we wake up. They turn faith matters into scorn. And vice comes to be regarded as virtue, a message pressed with vigor by third world cultural elites whose dominant attitude of any semblance of a sacred order is one of mockery, cynicism, and irony. I even hear that sometimes in supposed evangelical circles. Oh, you believe in creation. Oh, you believe that the world is only 6,000 or 7,000 years old. Perhaps the Rolling Stones capture the third world cultural mood best. Quote, now that every cop is a criminal and all the sinners saints. Isn't that what we're talking about here? The law enforcement people, bad. Sinners are now put up on a pedestal. Brave, courageous, progressive, on the right side of history. By the way, the name of that song comes from Sympathy for the Devil by the Rolling Stones. What is the increasingly thin foundation on which today's sexual codes are built? Mere consent. That's what Barbara Streisand was alluding to. Hey, they said they were thrilled to be there. In other words, they gave him permission. They gave consent to Michael Jackson to molest them. Who are you to judge? And that is why the push for pedophilia is growing. A little child can give consent. It doesn't have to be in the closet anymore, as long as there is consent, which is interesting. Because that definition that is created by the world has caused a great deal of problems on university campuses and society in general. When boys and girls are out at a party, there's drinking, some other stuff potentially going on, and suddenly things get a bit out of control. And now we have to protect women from louts and their behavior. How do you do that? Well, you start defining consent. Consent needs to look like this. Maybe it needs to be in writing. Apparently, there needs to be a form in triplicate. There's the consent that was given. I don't know if blood level needs to be examined to see if any alcohol was in their blood when they signed the document. But they're struggling with consent. Here's the Christian definition. Get married. There's your consent. Now, obviously, not to molest one's own spouse, but that's saying, yes, I wish to join with you in a one-flesh union under the covenant of marriage between a man and a woman. There's your consent. It worked out pretty well when we were a second-world country. Now we are third-world, and mere consent is all that is needed for any behavior at all. It is not the intrinsic nature of the individual sexual act that renders it unacceptable today. Rather, it's whether those involved are willing participants. That's all. Negotiating personal desire, not objective moral judgments, is the ethical order of the day. Bingo. If you believed that there were still prophets predicting the future, you'd say Philip Reef was one. The book, Sacred Order, Social Order, Capturing, before it really has accelerated to this speed, predicting what was going to happen. Third worlds, inevitably. Now, this is studying history. No God, nothing transcended. Third worlds inevitably tend toward individual personal hedonism. That means that the purpose of sex will be transformed and the taboos surrounding it abolished. Abortion, emblematic of that. sex doesn't have a higher ideal, not for the purpose of reproduction. Abortion is just removing evidence of past sexual activity. All that's significant in the act of intercourse is just the passing pleasure. That's it. And so, of course, you'd want to abort that. I'm just having a good time. That's what hedonism does. It undermines the prohibitions on incest, homosexuality, and any other kind of sexual coupling one cares to imagine. It furthers the idea that such taboos are arbitrary at best, and thus ripe for abolition. Our current culture is anti-culture. Why? Because Nietzsche's madman was correct. If you unchain the earth from the sun, you end up plunging into total darkness. It's getting dim out there, isn't it? This is Wretched Radio.
Important dates in Christian history. 312 AD. Emperor Constantine is converted after seeing a vision of the cross. He becomes a defender and advocate of the oppressed Christians. After his death, Christianity became the official religion of the Roman Empire, which endured in some form for another 1,500 years. This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
If you haven't been, please be praying for Christians who are being persecuted. This is Wretched Radio. 280 Christians killed in attacks in Nigeria. 280. Nigeria, Islamic president, not much of anything being done to protect Christians being slaughtered by Fulani militants. 280. I read another report last week. It was 130. Now, I don't know if it went from 130 to 280. Does it matter? The number one persecuted demographic in the world, Christians. And there is a reason for that. When people hate Christ, they will hate the Christ ones. This is my Philip Reef-like prediction. In the future, you can look forward to it, Western Christian. You can look forward to it. There is pent-up fury that is only restrained by God's common graces against believers. When people have the ability, they're no longer restrained by law, order, rules, philosophy, values. 280 people get slaughtered. That's all. And it's going on everywhere. Millions of our Christian brothers and sisters persecuted as we speak. Please be praying for them. And if you want to help them out, by the way, by sending a Bible, would you please do that? Please. Bible League International, $5 a Bible. They sent a Bible. Send a Bible in the language of the believers who are being persecuted. That's their focus now through the summer. If you'd like to join that effort to get a Bible into the hands of the persecuted church, please do so. Wretched.org/Bible. Wretched.org/Bible. You can also call 1-800-YES-WORD. You'll have to figure out those numbers for yourself. 1-800-YES-WORD. Just saw video. Again, I think I've maybe seen this in the past, but when people receive a Bible for the first time and they're just half out of their minds, they can't believe they've been given something so precious. Just beautiful. We just kind of take it for granted. They appreciate it a ton. Wretched.org/Bible for your consideration. Two more book reviews. Joey, pick your favorite. We'll do whatever you say first.
Yeah, right.
Van Gogh. This is a bit of a review, if you will, by Douglas Bond. Dear Theo, the unvarnished letters of Vincent Van Gogh to his younger brother, Theo. Dear Theo, would you like Dear Theo? Or would you like a book review on the power of communion by Benny Johnson? You pick.
Van Gogh.
Van Gogh it is. What was the Van Gogh? It was Don McLean. Don McLean. That song was about Van Gogh. Right? Joey, you look perplexed. Trust me on this one. I know history, Pally.
No, that was about the Big Bopper and Richie Valens. And
no, that's American Pie.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, he had another song. So sorry for your sanity, and I just set you free. Would you please look it up and spare me the misery and everybody else, too? Riches to Rubbish. Again, this is from Douglas Bond. Like I said, not a review as much as pulling out from the letters from Vincent Van Gogh to his brother Theo Van Gogh, specifically his, what did I call him?
No, it's Vincent, Starry, Starry Night by Don McLean.
Oh, I thought I said his name wrong or something.
No, I was...
Starry,
I was
Starry Night.
Yes. Paint
what
your
are the lyrics to that, please?
Paint your palette blue and gray.
Yeah.
Look out on a summer's day with eyes that know the darkness in my soul. Shadows on the hills, sketch the breeze and the daffodils. Catch the breeze and the winter chills and colors on the snowy linen land. I'm just going to
stop.
Do
we repeat
there.
That 17 times? Because if you did, it could be a worship song.
No, it's a Don McLean song, so it's... There's no repeating anywhere. It just goes on for 10 minutes.
Daffodils. God takes care of the daffodils in the field. That is almost a worship song.
Oh, here we go. Yeah. Now I understand what you tried to say to me and how you suffered for your sanity, how you tried to set them free. They would not listen.
They would not listen. They did not know how. Perhaps they'll listen now.
Yep.
Would you like to hear my efforts on memorizing Romans chapter 8, 1 through 5?
Yes.
It won't be as good as my recollection of a song I never particularly cared for, but music. Just telling you, music is powerful. Be careful, worship leader, what you lead your congregation in singing and by whom. Dear Theo focuses on, or this article from Douglas Bond at the Aquila Report is focusing on Van Gogh's Christianity, and I do believe that there is a lesson in here for us. He grew up in a Dutch Reform family in the Netherlands, surrounded by the Bible and the gospel. His father, a pastor, Vincent wrote, "It is a delightful thought that in the future, wherever I shall be, I shall preach the gospel." Wow. To do that well, one must have the gospel in one's heart. May the Lord give it to me. This is sounding very evangelical. His appeared to be a single-minded vision for his life's work. Quote, Theo, woe is me if I do not preach the gospel. If I did not aim at that and possess faith and hope in Christ, it would be bad for me indeed. Wow. May I ask you, do you have a prodigal right now? Because that's what Van Gogh appears to have become. Did he believe perhaps before he lost his sanity? I don't know. We'll find out someday in heaven. Hope so. But this is a fellow who grew up in a Christian home that walked away. Remember, Mom, Dad, you can be as good a parent as Vincent Van Gogh's pop was. You can't get your kids saved. You can't get them unsaved. You can't get them saved. Take yourself off the hook. God does not have you on regarding your prodigal child. Back to Vincent. By all his earlier accounts of his family and father, the Van Gogh household was no nominal Christian home. No sense whatsoever his father led them in a merely perfunctory expression of religion. While in England, he wrote of his parents, quote, "So strong is the family feeling and our love for each other that the heart uplifts itself and the eye turns to God in praise." Quote, "Do not let me stray too far from them, not too far, O Lord." He did later in life. I think he died at the age of 33, 37. He was not old by any means. Quote from Dear Theo, "You do not know how I yearn toward the Bible. I read it daily, but I should like to know it by heart." Yeah, try memorizing Romans 8 through 5, Vince. "To study thoroughly and lovingly all those old stories, and especially to find out what is known about Christ. But something began to change. And as he wrote to his brother, Douglas Bond noticed there's a change here in focus. And this might be a lesson for you and me to make sure that we don't end up like Vincent van Gogh. And I'm not just talking about having one ear. Apparently, walking away from faith, which of course means he was never a part of the faith in the first place. How do you persevere in the faith? Whole letters contained an obsessive fixation on his painting and on being successful as an artist. Remember our threefold enemy, the world, the flesh, and the devil. The devil uses the world system teachings, fame, fortune, that's what's important. Fame, success, it'll make you happy, Vincent. And it feeds right into the flesh, because remember our flesh, this old carcass, has not been regenerated yet. We're in the now not yet stage of Christian eschatology. We're not glorified yet in the process of our salvation, sanctification, and glorification. Vincent van Gogh let his flesh take over repeatedly throughout the autobiographical account those letters form. Vincent begins to reveal a systemic shift in his values and priorities, his passions and his aspirations. So then throughout the rest of the letters, Van Gogh is obsessed with perfecting his craft, making money. Quote, I am a devil for work. I consider myself decidedly below the peasants. Very difficult, very difficult. He created over 900 paintings and 2,000 drawings in a desperate attempt to become famous and make money. How did something like this happen in his youth? Earnest for the word, and he came to such a miserable end. Maybe 1 John 5:21 is a lesson for us all. And so it will be for you. Little children, keep yourselves from idols. It appears Vincent van Gogh had an idol himself. You say, wait, I thought it was fame and fortune. No, that's just a fruit from the idol. Idol self can take over, kick God off his throne, seat you squarely there, and your end will be misery. Wouldn't we all do well to self-examine? Not navel-gazing perpetually, but to self-examine to see if there are any idols in our hearts so we don't end up like Vincent? This is Wretched Radio.
The main character of missions is the theologian preacher who goes out and proclaims the word of God. And I would suggest to you that the great majority of missionaries on the field do not fit this description.
The Master's Academy International, they're working tirelessly to change that. We have pastors all over the globe, but in so many countries, they have no means to get educated. The Master's Academy International trains indigenous pastors to become theologians, scholars, and right expositors of the word. Think of the impact of a pastor preaching rightly to his congregation, who then goes out and shares the good news that they've heard preached rightly. Small investment, massive impact. Could you support a pastor to be trained as a theologian? Wretched.org/pastor.
Without the generous and continuous support of God's people, Wretched would simply not exist. So if I might take a moment, if you're already supporting Wretched, we are extremely thankful. You are directly responsible for keeping the lights on here. Please know, 83% of every dollar that you entrust to us is used for ministry work. In other words, we spend money as if eternity depended on it because, well, if you are not currently a Wretched supporter, would you consider giving a tax-deductible gift to Wretched on a monthly basis? We truly need, welcome, and appreciate your trust, prayers, and support. When you become a Wretched Gospel Partner, you help us preach the gospel, equip the saints to preach and defend the gospel, and strengthen the local church. And it's true. The more you give, the more we can just give away. Visit wretched.org/donate and become a gospel partner today. That's wretched.org/donate.
guess which year in our modern era has been the most violent year for Christians worldwide. If you said 2018, congratulations, you're correct. And persecution is not abating this year. Christians are being persecuted in more countries than any other religious groups. Millions of believers suffering, labor camps, imprisonment. They're facing physical violence. They're denied basic services like, you know, water, electricity, schooling, employment. Perhaps the least we can do for these dear brothers and sisters is to provide a Bible for them. Millions of persecuted Christians don't have the Word of God. Bible League International wants to change that with your help. $5 a Bible. How many could you send to our persecuted brothers and sisters overseas? At wretched.org/Bible.
Know your church fathers. Athenagoras was a Christian philosopher in Athens who used his training to defend the Christian faith against Roman persecution. He wrote On the Resurrection of the Dead, arguing that the nature of God, the nature of humanity, and the concept of justice only makes sense if there is a physical resurrection.
This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
The peaches and cream ain't bad, I don't mind telling you. This is Wretched Radio. The pure protein, premier protein, that's the name of it. 30 grams of protein. If you want one, just come visit us in Wretched Land because, well, I bought this protein drink, peaches and cream, which I think was a group from the 80s.
It was peaches and herb, but yeah.
Whatever.
Several peaches, one herb.
Peaches and cream would have been better. I mean, the guy's name would have had to have been Cream. Wasn't there a band named Cream? What does Eric Clapton have to do with this? At any rate, if you want one, just come by because I got them at Costco, which means I've got about 800 of them sitting around. Happy to share with you if you like this.
Yeah, but don't they expire next Tuesday?
What?
Don't they expire next Tuesday?
Yeah, that's the fruit
at
Costco.
Sorry.
Hey, if you ever buy the bread at Costco, not the really expensive cranberry nut, although that's very delicious. I'm talking about the two cheap loaves, and typically they're warm when you buy them. I don't know how they do it, but they're regularly warm. You're never going to finish it by yourself. The family's not going to devour two loaves in one day. It's good to the next day, and if you freeze it and then heat it up, it's good eating. Todd, thanks for the Costco tips. We are here to serve. Tony,
yep.
Guess the number of Christians who are killed every day for being a Christian. Just go ahead and guess. Now, don't get crazy with this because it's not like 7,400,000. But go ahead and guess how many Christians are killed every day that we know of.
Every day.
Mm-hmm.
10.
Oh, you're well done. You could win both showcases with that. It's 11 Christians killed every day.
Wow.
21st century.
That's
persecution against Christian believers is the highest in modern history. Now, it could have been more in the past, but it is very high right now. Let's remember a lesson in this. Even though this is happening overseas, Open Doors doing this report, why couldn't it happen here? People hate Christ everywhere. They hate him everywhere. And if they hate him in North Korea, there are leaders here who hate him. And we are not immune from this. And it sure appears that we could soon be a statistic from Open Doors, which report revealed the difference. This is not a pleasant story. The difference in the way that men and women are persecuted. You're probably able to guess. Women, let's start there. Ladies first. Oh, speaking of ladies first, did you read the Denny Burke article on the sinking of the Titanic? It was a quote from Winston Churchill, how he responded when he heard that when the Titanic sank, that it was a beautiful picture of Western civilization, specifically informed by Christianity. That men are the protectors, the providers. They are the ones who sacrifice their lives. Winston Churchill was like, see, this is how good of a society we are. Not only did this society create that boat, but it also demonstrated Heroism. Here it is. Andrew Roberts' recent biography on Winston Churchill called Walking with Destiny. Aren't we all, my sovereigntist friend? Quote, Winston Churchill. I'm translating this from British. I cannot help feeling proud of our race and its traditions as proved by this event. Boatloads of women and children tossing on the sea safe and sound, and the rest, silence. Honor to their memory. In spite of all the inequalities and artificialities of our modern life, at the bottom, tested to its foundations, our modern civilization is humane, Christian, and absolutely democratic. How differently Imperial Rome or ancient Greece would have settled the problem. The swells, the potentates would have gone off with their concubines and pet slaves and soldier guards. And whoever could bribe the crew would have had the preference, and the rest could go to, yep, he used the Hades word. But such ethics could neither build Titanics with science nor lose them with honor. That has been the Western civilization understanding of roles as informed by the Bible. I wonder if a boat went down today. I think there was just recently, there was like a carnival boat or one of those cruise boats.
Viking cruise, yeah.
I think they were distracted probably dealing with the E. coli. Wow, people, wash your hands if you're going to do the cruise boats. And it got hit with water, and the thing really was in trouble. People got hurt. I wonder if it had started to sink, if it had hit the shoals as it was very close to doing, would men have said, no ladies and children first. Dear, you get saved. Or would men have started fighting one another to secure a seat? We're living in a different culture. We certainly are living in a different time. Remember, when Christianity abates, women and children are always the ones to get hurt. How do they get hurt when they're persecuted? It won't surprise you, according to Open Doors. The three most common points of persecution for women are, you guessed it, a sexual attack, forced marriage, and rape. Now, I don't know what the difference is between sexual attack and rape, but they made some sort of distinction. Great value in many societies around a girl's purity, family honor. So what do? Targeted rapes.
Yeah.
To bring shame to a family, to get them to denounce the faith. This is going on right now. The most common trend in gender-specific persecution of Christians is the targeted raping of women for the purpose of bringing shame upon their families and community. Then there's forced marriage. 57% of the 49 countries that Open Doors sought to understand what sort of persecution happens between men, the difference between men and women, they cited forced marriage as an issue. No countries reported forced marriage as an issue for men. But women, you're going to marry that guy. Girls, often used as sex slaves, breeders, lovely, or militia wives. That is how women are persecuted. Wait, well, there's more. Women face the risk of forced divorce. That's nice. He's a Christian, you got to get divorced. Or you're a Christian, you've got to get divorced to the most, whatever. They force divorce. Why? Because it brings about a great deal of shame. In America, no big whoop these days, courtesy of Richard Nixon and no-fault divorce. But in foreign countries, oh, the shame. And other Christians look at it and they don't want, or people who are considering the claims of Christ, and they don't want it. Here's another brilliant form of persecution for women. They lose custody of their kids if they convert to Christianity. Nice. What woman wouldn't think twice? I mean, come on. Losing your kids? Let's transition to the men, shall we? Among the persecution methods of males, economic harassment, forced military duty, torture, imprisonment, shunning, and shaming. Slightly longer list, apparently. Economic harassment, top form of religious persecution for men. They can't provide for their families. They can't eat. They can't pay the rent. They can't buy the bread. 34 of 46 countries that were surveyed by Open Doors say economic harassment was used to put pressure on Christian men and converts. Furthermore, six countries were reported as having issued fines as a form of economic pressure on Christian men. Male converts to Christianity are often prevented from getting and retaining gainful employment. I think that's called discrimination. And speaking of discrimination, Facebook is. A lot of Christians are in a bit of a panic. They're stifling speech. I say, if Facebook, a private organization, wants to stifle speech, so be it. Let's just keep it equal opportunity discrimination. In other words, Facebook, they don't want hate speech. Okay, that's a risky term. They're specifically, in this instance, very concerned about racism. Who of us isn't? And so they're saying if you say anything that makes your race sound superior in any way, white nationalism, white superiority, they're just going to shut you down. And I say we despise that attitude too. But if you're concerned that they're discriminating and that has an impact on Christians, well, maybe. But I think they have the right, just like we have the right to discriminate when it comes to not hiring pagans in our churches. Male converts to Christianity in some countries don't get work. After being persecuted, the family suffers through reduced income. Torture and physical violence were reported in 35% of the 46 countries. Violence with the inclusion of death. Boys, men, verbally abused, physically assaulted, tortured, burned alive, shot to death, and even had their business taken over just at the mere suspicion of conversion. All that to say, these are people who go big or get persecuted. Please be praying for your Christian brothers and sisters. Please petition God to protect them. 11 a day. Until tomorrow, go serve your king.